The VGRT Gaming Podcast, episode 577, recorded on June 22nd, 2020.
Welcome to the 577th edition of the TD Gaming Podcast and 410th episode of Video Game Roundtable. I am TJ Dinser.
I am Scott Dirk.
And I am Jonah Fowle.
The VGRT Gaming Podcast focuses on game news from around the industry and a gaming flashback.
So, a lot of stuff is going on, and I saw this pop up today, and I want it so badly, except there's a catch. So, this is not part of the news. This is just Space Invaders Invincible, the most complete boxed collection to date. Space Invaders celebrating their 40th anniversary, so this is going to contain Space Invaders, the 1978 arcade, black and white, Space Invaders 1978 arcade color, although I will say, you know, back then the color was fake. Basically, they just put colored things in front of the monitor, so it looked like they were changing colors. Space Invaders Part 2, 1979. Majestic 12, the Space Invaders Part 4, 1990. And what happened to 3?
What platform is this on?
Super Space Invaders 91, Space Invaders Extreme, Space Invaders Gigamax 4 SE, Arkanoid versus Space Invaders, which was only on mobile, Space Invaders DX, Space Cyclone, and Lunar Rescue. Space Cycle was in 1980, and Lunar Rescue is 1979. And here's where I'm frustrated. It's only coming out on Switch for $60.
Wow. I had no idea there were that many Space Invader games. I thought it was just
Space Invader. A lot of people played Space Invaders DX and Space Invaders Extreme. Because, remember, remember when they started hypercharging all the old games? Like Galaga, you know, it was Hyper Galaga and that sort of stuff.
Oh, yeah. Like Super and Hyper and, yeah.
Yeah. But Arkanoid versus Space Invaders, so you play as a paddle, and not only can you shoot, but you can also bounce balls back up at the Space Invaders. And it's very, 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 very Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And all these Ghibli characters popping up. But yeah, I will hope this comes to PC or Xbox, because this is my thing.
Yeah, I would think it would go on as many platforms as possible, because I know Atari already released games on Steam, and so why wouldn't they put it on
Xbox?
This
is actually a collaboration between Square Enix and Taito. Taito did the original Space Invaders, mm-hmm. and I'm trying to wonder where Square Enix comes into this.
I guess it feels a little weird to see some certain games being exclusive, like...
Okay, for sure.
Yeah. What, TJ?
Oh, I heard you say Taito, and I was like, you mean Taito, right?
Taito. Okay, well, whatever.
I was like...
Well, it's spelled Taito. I mean...
Well, I'm sorry. I was just... I heard potatoes.
I mean, at least Switch is a big platform, whereas, like, Oceanhorn 2 is still on the Mac iOS and not on anything else. And I feel like that's probably not as big as the other platform.
There's actually more to this, because from one store you can get a collector's edition, which is physical, mm-hmm. for $100, which includes the soundtrack, an arcade book, a sticker sheet, 4 instruction cards, 6 flyers, a pin, 4 acrylic art cards, an arcade PCB box, and a collector's box with a magnetic latch.
That's very cool. Taito's been doing some neat stuff lately. They also just put out Bubble Bobble Friends.
Yeah, they also have
four friends.
Space Invaders Invincible Ultra Collection Ultra Edition, which comes with all that, but also the board game and some special items.
Space Invaders is a nice game. I don't think I like it that much.
No, but the Space Invaders board game is actually a Euro-style board game. It's not like Monopoly or anything like that. It's actually a serious board game. But, I don't know. I would spend the $100 for the arcade book and the sticker sheet and the arcade PCB box.
If they were to do this with, like, elevator action, I would absolutely pay $100 for a collector's edition
of the day.
Yeah, they own a lot of different arcade titles that like from all over the board.
But here's the thing: if you're going to release Elevator Action, I say, well, you have to get games like Rolling Thunder and other games of its ilk.
I do have a little piggy bank Space Invaders arcade box that I got in Loot Crate like many years ago. So that, but I mean, that's about all I have of Space Invaders.
Now, the reason why I bring this up is that I actually just did a review of Pong Quest.
Oh, nice.
And I will say about Pong Quest, since we're talking about, I guess we're moving right into what you've been playing. Pong Quest is really for kids. And I'm not saying that pejoratively. I'm saying that as, you should get this for kids, like from age 7 to 10. Because the gameplay is obviously is really simple. It's Pong. But you also have special balls. Like if you equip the curve ball, the ball will just start going all over the place as it goes to the other side. You can dress up the Pong with anything, you know, with hair and suits and all that stuff. And there's actually a lot of expressiveness that you can get from it. And I hate to say this, but it's sort of like Pong meets Pokemon. Not in the catch-em-all, just the tone. It has the same music and the same sound effects as if you were playing Pokemon on your DS. It has that distinct Pokemon traveling overland music to it.
And this was... What is the game?
It's Pong.
It's Pong with Pokemon music?
Yeah. Well, the thing is, you wander around an open world, and you go into these places which are sort of like enter the dungeon, actually Zelda-like dungeons. And just like in Pokemon, if an enemy sees you, you locked into combat. just like in Pokemon. When you lock eye contact with another trainer, you know, you go into combat. Same thing here with Pong.
Huh.
And, you know, it's... One of the things, though, is that they have to make it easier because you're using a controller. Because if you really wanted to make it hard, you need a paddle controller. Because with an analog controller, there's just so fast you can go. When you have a paddle controller, you just switch up. You know, it's like you just go super fast. You can't do that with Pong.
Oh, you're talking about like the actual little roller, the
paddle. Yeah, it's you know that.
What do you call that thing?
It's called a paddle controller. It's always been called a paddle controller.
Oh, I thought there was a special name for like.
No, that's a special name for it. A paddle.
Oh.
It's called a paddle controller.
Okay.
And you know, like if you ever play Kaboom, you need a paddle controller for that. You can't use a joystick.
Mm-hmm.
So if they had a paddle controller, then it could really go nuts.
Yeah.
But as it is, you have to use an analog stick, which is fine, but it doesn't allow you the speed that you need to really play a really fast game of Pong. You could also, of course, play the original Pong in the game. Although it's just there as a curiosity. The main game, I mean, it's a nice main game with simple rules that get a little bit harder if you really want to deep dive it. It's perfect for kids. You could just plop them down and, you know, I believe it. It almost felt like it was a mobile game, but it wasn't. So anyways, that's what I've been playing is Pong. Pong Quest, anyway.
So. That sounds fun and charming. Like
It isn't the most challenging game, but you can, like I said, you can just plop a kid in front of it, or you can play with a kid. Because obviously, you know, it's a competitive game. And one of the things that pissed me off is I was doing search to see what the origins of the game was, right? And there was this article from Slashdot that just pissed me off. Like, Pong Quest is the game that no one asked for or wanted. And my answer is, fuck you! How dare you! He reminds me of people who lambast boy bands. And my answer is always, well, what the fuck do you care? They're not for you. They're for teenage girls.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not nice when creepy game on games you like.
It's like, this is not for you. Not everything is built for you. No one made Pong Quest for you. Go ahead and play Dark Souls. Let the kids play Pong Quest. I mean, what's next? You're going to criticize Barbie's horse trainer?
Well, I've heard criticisms as it being not a good game in general, the Barbie Quest Trainer. The game comes.
No, there are some good ones that actually go deep. With those kind of games, basically, you can tell the quality from the depth it goes to.
Yeah.
You know? Which, by the way, that reminds me. A game popped up in front of me because I was looking through Games Press for the first time in ages. And one game popped up and it said Rival Stars Horse Racing, Desktop Edition. And I used to play a game called Omniplay Horse Racing back in, I think it was 1990-something, or maybe 1990, which was all about horse racing and betting. And I just said, this I got to try out.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like a game in which you can get a bunch of friends together and you all bet on horse races with virtual money. I mean, yeah, we can raise horses, but I just want to look at the programs and try and bet and see which one of us can win.
Yeah.
That would be cool.
So anyways, what have you been playing, Scott?
I've been finishing up the Trials in the Sky third chapter, and I've gotten to the last plane, and I'm just going to fight some optional pit fiends and then go after the boss, and I don't really want to spoil this for TJ, but damn, did they do some stuff I've never seen in an RPG before. But yeah, I'm almost done with that game, and then I'll be able to move on to Cold Steel, and it's, again, this game is a transition. It transitions you onto the next story, which I like, and it closes out the past story or the previous adventure, tying up loose ends and then teasing you about what's going on in these other areas. And I always like when RPG worlds are filled with other places, because like Final Fantasy, you get like 10 cities and the whole entire planet, whereas like games like Suikoden, you have all these countries, and each of them have about 15 cities, so they each have their own identity and their own conflicts, and it just makes the world feel more fleshed out. So, Trials in the Sky is like that, where it has a lot of different areas, and then the next series goes to that new area. So I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah.
Nice.
And what have you been playing, DJ? Have you finished Desperados 3 yet?
Nope. I fiddled around a lot with there was a Steam Game Fest this last weekend.
Yep.
The Steam Game Fest Summer Edition, and they had a ton of indie games, like demos, going up on there.
They also had the IGN, sort of like the PC Gaming Show, but IGN did their own little version of it.
Yes. But I got to play I tried out a whole bunch of different indie games during the whole thing. Two of them that really stood out to me was 30XX and Rustler, Grand Theft Horse. So 30XX is a
Mega Man.
Sequel.
Just say it's Mega Man.
It's a sequel to another game, though, which is very much Mega Man like.
Yeah, it's Mega Man roguelike, yeah.
Uh-huh. So what it does is, like, instead of, like, giving you a set level, you get a piece together set of, like, basically they give you a theme level with a boss and a mid boss, and those are always static, but everything in between them is like pieced together from a set of like roguelike pieces that you have to sort of respond to on the fly and figure out the best way to go through. It's very reflex driven, and 20XX was kind of a Mega Man, like regular Mega Man focus, and I would say that 30XX is like Mega Man X. There's a big emphasis on like dash mobility and like dash jumping through the level, and
why does
I love
it just
that.
Remind me of being a candy colored Dead Cells?
I think it's better. I think it's better than that, anyways. It's not like it doesn't feel like a copycat or like a pretender to me. Like, there's
How did you get it, by the way? It's not out yet.
It was during the Steam Game Fest. It was during the Steam Game Fest Summer Edition. They had a whole bunch of demos available during this last weekend.
Okay.
And so they were a bunch of them were temporary. I gotta say, like, when it comes to a game like this, the music's got to be good. Because if the music isn't good, then I'm not as interested or hyped up to keep trying through a level that just wants to destroy me. And the music, like, right off the bat, the music in this game is really, really good. I really enjoy it. Like, I would actually buy the soundtrack to this game and put it on in the background while I work.
You have the typical, you know, electric guitar Mega Man music?
Yeah, like that chiptune pop style.
Yeah. Well, it emulates electric guitar, sort of sounds like a little like an electric guitar we're going.
Yeah. But it really just like captures a lot of the spirit of Mega Man, the music, the style in general, I think. I think they're doing a good job. Like, I've played 20XX and I enjoyed it, but I don't know that I felt it was all that special. This one, like, there's only two levels available in the demo that I played.
Yeah, the demo's gone.
But it was fun. It was really, really fun to learn the style of the levels and listen to the music and defeat the bosses and actually nail down a good run. The other one I played was Rustler, which is basically Grand Theft Auto 1 and 2, yeah, but ye old medieval times. And when I say that, I mean like
can
right
you
down.
Hijack a horse?
You can. And if you piss off the guards. The Kingdom Guards, they'll yank you off of your horse and throw you in jail.
Actually, you know, the game actually calls itself Grand Theft Horse.
Mm-hmm.
It's not even shy about it.
That's
it's really cheap.
Enjoy medieval thug life.
Because you play, like, a peasant, and everybody is, like, very self-aware that they're shitty peasants.
Uh-huh.
And it actually also does the Grand Theft Auto style of, like, when everybody talks, they just, like, mumble. They're like, while the dialogue is going. It's got a lot of jokes that, like, people that have played Grand Theft Auto 1, 2, or London would really enjoy, I think. Plus the fact that you just, like, ride around on a horse and you don't have, like, modern weapons. Like, one of the first shootable weapons you get is a crossbow. And you can, like, fire one bolt out of that thing before you have to spend, like, 5 seconds reloading.
Yeah, I can already see the influence of Monty Python with the Black Knight.
So, like, you better not miss. I had all sorts of fun with this game. It was a lot of good humor. It was very. Somebody described it to me as they were watching me play as, this looks like somebody got drunk and were like, you know what was great? Grand Theft Auto, but like what would be greater is like horses and shit. So they nailed it on the head. They did a good job. They took a drunk idea and ran with it.
And also the demo is still available.
Nice. Yeah, absolutely. If you like the style of the early Grand Theft Auto, go play that. Go play Wrestler.
It's by a publisher I never heard of, Games Operators.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually I would expect this would be Devolver Digital shit.
Yeah, it definitely has a Devolver Digital tone to it, I would say.
Yep. So, speaking of demos, this past week, after the podcast, I actually played a stream of Grounded with TJ commenting as well. And, what's it called? The thing is that I never really explored really deeply into it, so the 30-minute demo I did twice, and there was a lot of shit that went on. A lot of shit. For example, there's one part of the garden which is infested with spiders and mm-hmm. spiderlings. And when the spider sees you, you better run. Don't even look back, just run. Just run in the opposite direction. And one of the coolest parts is that the spiders actually have mass, and you may not be able to see them, but you'll see the grass stalks waving as they run through them like raptors in Jurassic Park 2. It's like, oh shit, here they come. I also killed a spiderling right in front of the mama.
Oh, it got so mad. It was like roaring.
Roaring.
And there's a, like he said, there's this little, there's this thing where, like, you see the grass blades, which are like trees, just pushing side to side as it lumbers through them after you.
Yeah. This feels like a game that would be good for VR. Then it would really immerse you in the environment of giant grass stalks and giant insects, and you feel like...
I don't
like
know. Playing this game in VR might actually give me arachnophobia.
Yeah.
I didn't try the arachnophobia mode yet. Someday I will. Maybe with a full game. But, other than that, it's extremely satisfying. I don't know if I discussed this last week, but I think I did.
Yeah, the crafting?
Yeah, and the thing is that unlike Subnautica and unlike No Man's Sky, it is really easy to craft, and it's really easy to figure out what's going on. Even... especially compared to something like Minecraft, you know, all these games which require you to go to a wiki to find out how to do it. No, you don't have to do it here. You don't need a wiki.
Hmm.
And I'm thinking, you know, this game is going to be really, really good because it has 4-player co-op. I can just imagine people just setting up, you do this, I'll chop down some grasslands. And the more I got into it, the more some other insects I managed to see, like, we didn't see a praying mantis, which is the only thing that spiders are afraid of. We saw some other insects, and it's like, yeah. Also, we also found out that ants are thievers, thieving buggers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, of course.
You have food in your inventory, they'll just run up and knock it out, and then look at you like a dog saying, either you're going to pick it up or I'm going to eat it. And also, there's a lot of natural stuff going on, you know. There's a deep, I forgot the term for it, but it's a living world, and, when you're not doing anything, other things will be doing stuff, and it'll be doing it as they would. Like, you'll see, ladybugs going after aphids, because ladybugs eat aphids, and ants also, will get dew out of them since, you know, aphids are also called ant cows. And, you know, it's just there's a living world there. Everything is procedural. And I was looking at all of the comments for it, and people are going apeshit. Every single preview that has been written about Grounded has been glowing. And I will say this, you know, there are some people who did this in 4K and posted the 4K videos on YouTube, and as good as it looked on mine with 2K, it looks amazing in 4K. Which is shocking to me a little bit because this started out as like a less than a dozen people at Obsidian working on this, you know, while the rest of Obsidian's working on the Outer Worlds too.
Yeah, like, this, ever since the beginning, like, ever since I saw what they were, there was a big old QA around the time, I think they did XO19, and, man, I have enjoyed everything that they've put out about this.
I was guarded, you know, it says, this looks like my kind of shit, but we'll see, you know, and, It exceeded expectations from me playing it. Like I said, the biggest thing for this sort of game is user-friendliness, and this game is extremely user-friendly.
Yes, agreed. I think it's probably one of the more... like, one of the things about it is that, like, it gives you... there's an actual quest line in it.
Yeah.
Like, it actually gives you context. One of the things I have a hard time getting into other survivor builders... is there's just no direction. And, like, as much as I don't mind just, like, exploring, as much as I don't mind just going around and seeing what I find, after the nth hour of that, I just kind of get bored.
I mean, Subnautica did have a plot line. I mean, your entire goal of that is to leave the planet, you know, and when you leave the planet, that's it, game over.
Well, a lot of games are like that. Like Don't Starve is also like that. There's a portal you have to activate and escape. But it's like TJ said, there's nothing that's really directing you on how to achieve those goals. You just kind of plop there and you have to figure that out.
But one of the good things is that, the game gives you direction, but it also gives you a wide berth of exploration.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no place you can't go, just so you know. You just better be ready to hoof it. Because it was at night, I was wandering in one direction, and I said, holy shit, there's like a dozen spiders here. And of course, they had to give the spiders glowing eyes at night.
Yeah, it's super creepy.
Yep. I'm sure that's very traumatizing for some people.
Yeah. I can see why they did it 30 minutes, too. The 30 minutes is the day-night cycle. It goes from morning to night to morning again in 30 minutes. So.
Yeah, and we never got to arachnophobia mode, but they do have that in case you are the type of person that sees a giant spider coming at you and says, nope, 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 so much nope, done with this game.
And the thing is that even if you're not scared of spiders, those things are creepy as hell. And when they lock eyes and you say, yeah, you're my next lunch, it's like, yeah, I got to get the fuck out of here.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man, it's terrifying when they shoot the web at you and you're like stuck for a second.
Yeah. Anyways, but like I said, they're having, I believe, the beta game. I don't know if it's alpha or beta, but they're having the beta alpha test in like a month or so. So that, you know, and since I'm on Game Pass, I'll be able to do it. I don't know how it's going to be on Steam or other things if you have to pay for it like you did Minecraft, but we'll see. But yeah, Microsoft's making some great content for Game Pass. I mean, for people who are frustrated with Sea of Thieves because you can't play it solo, this game you could at least play solo. It may be more of a grind than if you're with friends, but at least it isn't impossible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something about, you know, making that spear and saying, oh, look, if I can get some thistles, I can make myself a spiked spear, which does even more damage. So you always have that grind. I still couldn't find any thistles. We found dandelions, but no thistles yet. Or I think you needed to upgrade your axe in order to chop down what might be thistles.
Yeah. And so there's a little bit of a, I don't want to say Metroidvania curve, but there is a little bit of this is inaccessible for right now, but once you come back with the right tool, it won't be.
Yeah.
And you saw that in an area there was an area over by the rake and the spiders and the stink bugs where it was like a mist that was coming up from the ground, and if you stood near it, it would like poison you.
I'm wondering though if that's just the border of the map, if you can't go any further than this. We'll see.
Speaking from,
I think there's got to be a limit. I mean, they can't.
Well, no, I mean, no. The limit could be if they wanted it to be the steps to the house. You can't climb them.
Right, that's true.
What I love is that it tells a story. It does a Dark Soulsian thing of telling a story just by the environment. Like you look around, you'll see two scientific things, which are probably the things that shrunk you down. You know. I'm hoping that Obsidian and Microsoft are cutting a deal with Rick Moranis to have him play a scientist.
I don't know. I heard supposedly he was going back for Spaceballs 2, but I don't know if that was just a rumor. So I don't know if he's actually out of retirement or what's going on.
What were you going to say, TJ?
Oh, I was going to say that from the Q&A that Grounded did, I do know for a fact that there is a way to get through that mist.
Oh, okay. That's cool. But, you know, at some point there's going to be a border. But you know what? It's a really varied, even if just for a long, like one part, the grass is all dry and dead. And dry grass is necessary for other types of crafting. And the way it doles it out, you know, you only get a little bit of information at a time. Like, you'll analyze a pebble. Okay, you can make this and this, and there'll be still some question marks because you got to discover other stuff. And I'm hoping that even if there's a conclusion to the game, I'm hoping that it takes a long while, because this is the sort of universe I would like to, you know, just to immerse myself in for a while.
Yeah, for sure. I haven't played the demo. I enjoyed watching you play it, but this is something like when I get into it, I kind of want to clear my slate for a while.
Yeah. And I'm wondering also about how they're going to do replayability. Is it, you know, how things are going to be randomized, or how, you know, or if you can jack up the the difficulty so that with a game like this, you have to have a difficulty mode that is near impossible, just so that people can keep banging their head over and over and over again trying to finish the story. You know, you got to have that one mode which is almost impossible, so people can just, you know, just oh, we wiped out. Okay, we have to start from the beginning. Let's start again. And when you do have that, there are some games, in mostly board games, which are so difficult that when you do a total wipe and you have to start over, it isn't like, oh, fuck. No, it's like, well, we lost. Let's try again. And I think, yep, Grounded might be like that. Yeah, we lost, but guess what? We're going to try again.
Yeah, I agree. There's going to be a lot of experimentation here with, like, all sorts of things, and I can't wait to see how it goes. I can't wait to see, like, there's going to be people that, like, efficiently put together how you get from one end of the yard to the other yard in the shortest amount of time and glitches possible.
What's amazing to me is we have to keep in mind, this is Obsidian's B game. This is their other game. This is the game that they put less of their manpower in. And I am more excited for this game than I am for The Outer Worlds 2. I mean, I don't know about you. I mean, you like The Outer Worlds. But it's sort of like, yeah, this – forget Outer Worlds 2. I don't care about that. This is where I'm going. This is where my attention is wandering to. You know, I mean, Team Ninja, you know, did Bleeding Edge, and people said, it's okay. They're excited over the sequel, you know, to Senua's Saga. You know, here it's like people are just going apeshit over this game. And what I hope this means is that Microsoft sees this and says, yep, expansion packs. Because this game is very easily expandable. I mean, okay, we have some DLC that's the swimming pool. And you can imagine, or a pond nearby. So you can have, you know, maritime stuff going on. Or, you know, you find a kite. And now you have a flight thing, and now, but you have to worry about birds wanting to peck your brains out, or just adding birds. You think the spiders are bad? Well, guess what likes to eat spiders?
Yeah. Bird would be about the – yeah, in this game, like, a bird would probably be about the size of, like, Godzilla.
Yeah, basically. I thought you were going to say something like a T-Rex. No. Much bigger than a T-Rex.
But one thing that I do remember –
oh, you know what would be extremely terrifying?
What's that?
Which would be like Smaug coming out. Imagine a DLC in which they added a cat. If you ever see The Secret of Nim, just remember Dragon and how she that cat resembled to Mrs. Brisby. Mm-hmm. Roared like a lion. I was like,
I'm sure they could add a lot of interesting things like lizards as well. That could actually
the problem with the cat is that they're fast. It's not like they're a big lumbering thing. They're going to run across the yard to get to you.
Yeah,
I remember when they did the Q&A, the director, Brinicky, was already talking about being able to ranch ants into a corral.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
And utilize them as, like, cattle.
That's the other thing, is that if you attack certain species of insects, you're going to piss them off, and they're not going to, you know, they'll start, you know, attacking you first, you know. There are relationships you can build with animals. I would never want to attack a gnat because there's so many of them. Fuck gnats. I'll just whack gnats no matter what. They're aggressive anyway. Gnats and mites are the most annoying things in the game. They're like the muskies and the barracudas in Maneater. It's like, even though you're huge, they're still going to attack you. It's like, stop that. Get away from me.
For sure.
But, yeah, I mean, I think we've talked long enough about about Grounded. I mean, this game already looks like it's going to be a really big hit. And I'm glad it's on Game Pass, so I don't have to spend money for it. Although I'm pretty sure there'll be plenty of expansions if something's popular enough. By the way, on that note, there's a lot more Evil Genius 2 content coming out, videos being released by the developers. And I know that's making TJ very happy, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen them?
I haven't seen them yet.
Okay, they released one today, and it's about gameplay, and more specific in the gameplay. So
nice.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy because there doesn't seem to be a Dungeon Keeper 3 coming out anytime soon, so... Yeah. Anyways, we do have a gaming flashback, and that gaming flashback is Amnesia: The Dark Descent. Amnesia: The Dark Descent is a survival horror adventure video game by Frictional Games, released in 2010 for Microsoft Windows, Mac OS X, and Linux, in 2016 for the PS4, and in 2018 for the Xbox One. The game features a protagonist named Daniel exploring a dark and foreboding castle, while trying to maintain his sanity by avoiding monsters and other terrifying obstructions. The game is critically well-received, earning 2 awards from the Independent Games Festival and numerous positive reviews. The player takes control of Daniel, who must navigate Brennenburg Castle while avoiding various dangers and solving puzzles. The gameplay retains the physical object interaction used in the Penumbra series, allowing for physics-based puzzles and interactions such as opening doors and fixing machinery. In addition to the health indicator, Daniel's sanity must be managed, centered around an afraid of the darkness mechanic. According to designer Thomas Gripp, the idea is basically that the darkness itself should be an enemy. Sanity is reduced by staying in the dark for so long, witnessing unsettling events, or looking directly at monsters. Low sanity causes visual and auditory hallucinations and an increased chance of attracting monsters, while its complete depletion results in a temporary drop in mobility or death in higher difficulties. Light sources help restore sanity, and if none are available, Daniel may use tinderboxes to ignite candles and torches or deploy an oil-burning lantern. However, the number of tinderboxes and the amount of oil available are both limited, even more so in higher difficulties. If a monster sees Daniel, it'll chase him until he evades its sight. Daniel has no means of fighting monsters, so he must either avoid being seen or run away. Daniel can withstand only a few attacks from a monster before he dies, which will cause the most recent save of the game to load. The player can restore Daniel's health by using a laudanum found throughout the game. The player can hinder monsters by closing doors and building barricades from nearby objects. However, the monsters can destroy doors and knock over objects. Hiding in dark areas where monsters will not notice Daniel is also effective, but will decrease Daniel's sanity. In higher difficulties, the monsters will move faster, deal more damage, and search for Daniel longer periods of time. An indirect sequel called Amnesia: A Machine for Pigs was released on the 10th of September in 2013, developed by the Chinese Room and published by Frictional. A Machine for Pigs is an indirect sequel to The Dark Descent, while set in the same universe, takes place in an alternate history with different characters. A direct sequel, titled Amnesia Rebirth, was announced on the 6th of March, 2020. Rebirth, the second Amnesia game to be developed by Frictional Games, is scheduled to release sometime this coming fall. So, I haven't played it, but I know that people swear up and down that it's the scariest shit you'll ever play.
I mean, there's definitely something in a monster that is hideous and just has its own sense of dread, but there's something I think even more scary in a monster that you're only allowed to see on the edge of your periphery, something that like damages you the more you look at it.
It kind of builds suspense of not looking at it, so you don't know where it is and how close it is, and you just have this imagining it like right there, you know, about to get you, and you're just waiting for it to strike you, and you're trying to run away and get away, and you don't know when that moment's going to drop, you know. So it builds a lot of suspense that way.
I forgot to mention that Frictional also worked on Soma.
Mm-hmm. And it's a very similar thing, although it's Soma's like all under the sea and stuff.
Yeah, here's the thing: Soma is an adventure game that says, "Oh, we're Frictional. We better put monsters in it."
Mm-hmm.
You know. There's a mode now. They added a mode in which there are no monsters, so
yes.
It's all philosophical. And the thing about Soma is that it's about the character and his past more than it is about monsters. Amnesia is all about trying to scare the shit out of you, apparently.
Yes. Well, it's coming face to face with insanity. Amnesia's monsters are like a manifestation of your own breaking mind. And to that end, like, speaking to that, like, you can't look at it or it'll get you type thing.
Is that game winnable, or is it just like as last as long as you can?
That's Bird Box.
Both Amnesia and Soma have like narratives to them, and you have to work your way through like an actual like campaign.
Okay.
There is an end game to it. But that said, like, man, props to the sound design on those games, because when you can't look at something and you have to rely on listening to the world around you, that's where a sound design either makes or breaks the game. If a monster, like, if you can't hear it until it's right on you, unless that's supposed to be, like, the wanted effect, like, I guess for a jump scare when everything is quiet and then you turn around and there it is, then it kind of fails. You gotta have that atmosphere of, like, you know it's there and you know it's coming and you know it's getting closer, but you can't, like, look.
Yeah, like, from what I understand, this game has almost no jump scares. I mean, everything is slow burn.
Yeah, I like slow burn in that you keep feeling like you keep hearing it, and you keep feeling like you hear little noises. I was like, that has to be it, and you look and there's nothing there, and then you just keep hearing that noise, and you can't get it out of your head, kind of thing. And that kind of atmosphere is good.
I remember playing the first Doom, you know, back in '93, and I would hear the clop, 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 and it's like, oh shit, there's a not the cacodie, I forgot the name of it, the horned creature.
Hellbear.
One of those things are nearby. I better watch out.
The imps. Oh, what? You were talking about the imps, the brown things with the.
They look like
horns.
Little devils, but they.
There's
they
so many
those
things
clop,
that have
clop,
horns
clop.
In that game. Oh, you mean, I think I know what you mean. The bulls, those big pink bulls.
Hellbear.
Not the cacodemon.
That's a hellbear. No, not the big thing with the rockets. I mean the little one that.
Oh no! Little. You're thinking of a cyber demon.
Cyber demons had. When they walked, you could hear the clop, clop, clop.
But there's an unmechanized version of the Cyber Demon called the Hell Baron.
Okay, I thought it was something else. I thought the Hell Baron was a big thing. Okay.
He's pretty tall. I would say he's like 9 feet tall. But there's smaller ones are imps.
I mean, it looks like a bull, like a big pink bull, and there's an invisible one.
Oh, they just call that one Pinky.
I'm just saying. When there was one nearby, you could hear the clop, clop, clops.
Right.
It's like
I would always hear the noise. Like, you would just hear snarls, and you just know something's close. And they would always make me jump and startle me. I just couldn't help it, even, you know, and I would just shake my damn mouse and shoot and miss, and sometimes, you know, just and blow something up and get myself killed. And it's just – Doom always got me like that. It was always good. It's jump scaring, so I think something like Amnesia would be even worse.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I mean, here's the thing. You may never get perfect graphics, but you can always get perfect sound.
Yes.
Yeah, that's true.
So paraphrasing from what a film teacher taught me is like, you'll never get perfect color, but you'll always get perfect black and white. Anyways, we're going to move on to game news. And go ahead, TJ.
Alrighty. Microsoft is shutting down Mixer streaming platform, from Game Informer. Microsoft has announced it's shutting down its Mixer video gaming streaming platform, once the exclusive home to the likes of Ninja and Shroud, on July 22nd, and partnering with Facebook Gaming as a new locale for viewers and streamers. In a statement, head of Xbox Phil Spencer said, "Ultimately, the success of partners and streamers on Mixer is dependent on our ability to scale the service for them quickly and broadly as possible. It became clear that the time needed to grow our own live streaming community to scale was out of measure with the vision and experiences we wanted to deliver to gamers now. So we've decided to close the operations side of Mixer and help the community transition to a new platform." Microsoft acquired Beam in 2016 and turned it into Mixer in 2017, and brought over superstar streamer Ninja last year from Twitch. According to The Verge, which talked to Spencer about the development, stars who signed the deals with Mixer, like Shroud and Ninja, are free to go back to Twitch. As of the time of this writing, neither Ninja nor Shroud has officially commented on the situation. The Verge also talks strategically about Microsoft's move, saying it gives Microsoft a broader base for its xCloud streaming service.
I'm willing to bet Microsoft basically told Ninja and Shroud, yeah, please, please go to Twitch, please.
So there's a few things that have also come out about this. Mixer basically said that in partnering with Facebook Gaming, they're going to be – anyone who wants to keep a contract will basically go over to Facebook and their contracts will be honored there.
I don't think Microsoft is particularly sweating over what Twitch does, though. I mean what Ninja does, to tell you the truth. What I'm getting from this is Microsoft saying, you know, running the website is expensive. We'd rather Facebook carry that load for us.
Yeah, I don't know. There was a lot of things about this. One of the worst ones I heard is that a bunch of the Mixer staff learned that Mixer was shutting down from social media rather than through Mixer themselves.
That's always terrible.
And I've also heard that a huge part of this is that there were some recent allegations that came out about Mixer, and one of the senior executives at Mixer making a profoundly racist statement.
I doubt. I think it would be easier for Microsoft just to fire him. I think the fact of the matter is this is not all about money. And they can save a lot more by synergizing with Facebook, doing the stream, and let them carry the heavy load of, you know, having the website and bandwidth and all that stuff. And let Microsoft worry about stuff like xCloud and, you know, the upcoming console launch. I mean, I still have my Twitch account, and I checked it today, and it's like, the one and only stream I did on it was for Titanfall 6 years ago, and it's still there. And I did it off the Xbox One, which at the time wasn't a very good streaming machine. So there's a lot of artifacting and all that stuff, you know. I'm pretty sure if I return to Twitch, which I probably will, I'll get a much better video.
Mm-hmm.
Besides, most of the stuff I do is just, you know, through OBS. And OBS is the one who records the video, so it's not like I have to worry about that as much.
Yeah.
But it was nice being able to have synergy between Windows and Xbox, and just if you wanted to stream something, just press a button.
Yeah.
And and the other thing is that I really should be investigating YouTube streaming too.
Yeah, YouTube seems to be the platform to go to, I think, for gaming, because I've never really watched that much Mixer before, and certainly not on Facebook Gaming. I don't think I'd want that on to watch gaming on Facebook.
I don't know. I have a lot of thousands of friends on Facebook. Wouldn't mind, you know, joining in on a Jackbox party that way.
Mm.
I mean, I'd for doing Let's Plays. Yeah, I'd probably do Switch. I mean, Twitch. Switch. See, it's on my brain now. But for just casual stuff, yeah, just go to Facebook, tell my friends, hey, guess what? If you want to watch me strip naked, I mean, if you want to watch me play Jackbox, let's go.
Nice. Yeah, I don't know. It's
an end of an era, so.
Yes.
It was a short era, though. I mean, Mixer didn't come along that far ago.
Well, it was Beam for a long while before being turned into Mixer, so.
Yeah.
But, you know, Mixer had its pros and cons. I mean, I don't know. Mixer upped the game in terms of interactivity anyway with the user. I mean, Twitch had to catch up with that, because Mixer allowed, you know, people to tip people easier. You know, it took a lot of stuff that Facebook adopted, I think. I'm not sure who did it first. But there was a lot of gadgets you could put in Mixer that was interactive from the console, from the PC, more integrated than it was with Twitch. And I'm pretty sure Twitch, I haven't seen all the features that Twitch has. You know, when I went into my thing, Twitch decided to go into, here, let me go into tutorial mode and tell you what you can do now. So we'll see. Anyways, we're going to move on to the next item, and I know this is something that TJ is probably all over. Street Fighter V Pros forfeit Capcom Pro Tour matches over lag, and this comes from some PC Gamer. The Capcom Pro Tour has moved online this year, and it's already whittling down the list of competitors, the best of whom will be fighting over the Capcom Cup, set to take place early next year. The transition to an online tournament hasn't been without issues, however, and two competitors, including last year's champ, have forfeited their matches over lag. Capcom Cup 2019 winner iDom pit his poison against Metro M's Vega in the loser semifinal of the top eight, but during the final fight, just after Metro M pulled off of four command grabs in a row and looked set to win, iDom disconnected, leaving commentators trying to figure out what happened. Metro M was awarded the win, letting him move into the loser's final against El Chicote. As last year's champion, however, iDom's spot in the Capcom Cup is still secure. After dropping out, iDom explained that it was down to lag, placing the blame on Metro M. He said on Twitter, "I'm not playing Metro M. I feel sorry for whoever has to qualify like this." He added that he's blacklisted Metro M. The match between Metro M and El Chicote lasted a bit longer, but after two games, both of which went to Metro M, El Chicote left the room, once again leaving commentators confused. He didn't return, so Metro M moved on to the final with DR Mandrake. El Chicote cited the same issue as iDom, saying, "If only you could have seen the fight from my end," on Twitter. Both players criticized Capcom's removal of the grid from the tournament. I'm pretty sure TJ will explain this. It's Street Fighter V's very plain training stage, which is popular in online brawls because it's believed to cause less lag, and there are fewer distractions, too. Capcom champ 2016 champion Knuckle Doo also called for Capcom to change the rule and to bring the stage back. He said on Twitter, "I don't really understand why Capcom would ban the grid. That was one of the laggiest matches I've ever played." DR Mandrake defeated Metro M in the final, grabbing a spot in the Capcom Cup. He also addressed the lag issue, saying that Street Fighter V's netcode, laggy stages, and characters like Vega can be frustrating online, but he criticized iDom and El Chicote for not finishing their matches, calling it a lack of respect and professionalism. So this year, TJ, has been a really rocky one for the esports fighting scene, from what I understand. Especially because I remember earlier this year, they couldn't have Super Smash Plus because you thought Street Fighter V was bad with lag. It was impossible with the net coding for that game, Super Smash Plus. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate.
Yeah, it's confounding. Super Smash Bros. Ultimate's net code is absolute hot garbage. And you know what? There's a lot of fighting games out there really aren't much better, and Street Fighter is one of them. The netcode in these games is freaking awful, to the point where what they're talking about with the grid is just like a blank cube.
Yeah, I got that.
And you're comparing that to a lot of different stages have a lot of different like animations and background noise going on that like if the online play is trying to compensate for that, then yeah, it's going to add a little bit of ping to that, which for a normal player, that may not matter. And actually some people tried to go up against Knuckle Doo and say, that doesn't matter. What are you talking about? And Knuckle Doo is like Knuckle Doo has won E3s or Evos at several points. When the guy says he like something causes a notable distraction or an issue, he knows what he probably knows what he's talking about. Like I having played fighting games up against professional players myself, I know that there's a difference between like
playing live and in front of them and playing online.
Yeah. Yeah. And especially the difference between just like everything going smooth and even the slightest bit of delay that can like throw off all of your timing.
We're talking about Street Fighter. Professional Street Fighter players know their fighters and hit contacts to the pixel. If if an animation is even the slightest different, they'll notice it right away and they'll compensate.
Well, and then there. Well, that's not the only one half of the equation. Street Fighter V is also super fickle in its inputs, to the point of if there's something that pushes off your timing a little bit, that continuation of the combo you're going for might not come out, or even worse, it might completely be a little bit late, and you just might miss and whiff and go through with the animation and be open to a horrible counter.
Yeah, I was about to say, doesn't it have counters too? I mean, that would be the bigger problem.
Mm-hmm.
Why? I mean, it does sound like it might have been lagging. It seems startling that Capcom wouldn't have better servers to accommodate this.
Why would they need to? Because Evo and other fighting game tournaments
all, they don't.
Are usually not online.
Yeah.
Online Capcom is sort of like the extra bit that they toss in.
Capcom took... I'm going to look up really quick what year Street Fighter V came out. Because there is...
That must have been a couple of years ago.
Capcom... Street Fighter V came out in 2016. It took them 3 years to make Street Fighter V a complete game. And what I mean by that is... It took them 3 years to put all of the characters that you would expect in a Street Fighter game, the stages... That you didn't have to buy, an effective amount of like balancing and things such as that that made sure a character didn't just override every other character, and they still don't have good netcode.
Yeah, I mean when it launched on Steam, the Steam reviews were mostly negative, and even now, the reviews are mixed. You know, barely 60% positive.
When Street Fighter V launched, it didn't have a player versus mode. You couldn't do either local player 1 versus player 2, and you couldn't do local player 1 versus a computer. Like how do you do that? How do you do that to a Street Fighter game? You don't, but Capcom did.
Seems like Capcom doesn't really care for some reason.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but fans actually made a mod that improved the netcode, and Capcom rolled out a patch that removed that mod's capability.
Yes. Capcom cares, but not in the way you might expect. Capcom cares in the way that they want to just make sure that you're buying the game and spending on the microtransactions.
Yeah, I actually got Street Fighter V for free through Loot Crate, and I thought at the time, I thought that was generous, but now, knowing about the microtransactions, knowing about the bad ratings, knowing about all these issues, I see why, because they were trying to lure more people in to play the game and do those microtransactions.
Oh, man. Grinding fight money in Street Fighter V to unlock anything for free is horrible. You'll spend we're not talking about Ubisoft Rainbow Six Siege where you can reasonably earn a character with a good amount of time. Unlocking a character in Street Fighter V requires a month or two of straight playing.
Ugh.
It's disgusting how slow the grind for fight money is in Street Fighter V because they want you to buy it. They don't want you to earn it.
Yeah, that's why I don't like these microtransaction stuff, because they design it so your patience just runs so thin that you're like, fine, I'll buy it. And I just stay away from games like that because that's not going to be fun.
You know, it's a pity because I remember when Street Fighter IV was released on PC, it was the best version anybody's ever seen of a Street Fighter game. And it just got rave reviews.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Thank goodness for Resident Evil, because if Resident Evil didn't come along, I mean, Street Fighter V is a prime example of the absolute worst that Capcom can do when it comes to its community.
Oh, well, I wouldn't say that. Let's not talk about Street Fighter X Tekken now.
TJ, at least you're getting a Resident Evil. Meanwhile, over here, Breath of the Fire is just staying at Quartet and hasn't been touched since then.
Correct. That's a bummer too. I kind of wish they would come out with another Dragon's Dogma, because that game is beautiful, and I would like to see a sequel.
They did re-release the remastered version, didn't they?
Yes, they did, but I would like a sequel. Because even the remastered version, like having I played it, it's a little bit dated.
I haven't played it yet. I mean, people tell me it's the Monster Hunter game that you'd prefer to play.
It's very good, I'll say that. Like, I really like all the RPG mechanics in Dragon's Dogma. It feels like a proper mix between like Dungeons and Dragons roleplay and then like actual and then action.
I still haven't played Dauntless. I keep meaning to, but I never get the time to.
Pretty sure I did play Dragon's Dogma. I need to make sure it could happen. See if this was the one I played.
I mean, they released Dragon's Dogma, and it has all the DLC with it, if I remember correctly.
Dark Arisen is Dragon's Dogma. Dark Arisen is the deluxe edition on PS4.
I mean, on PC, it's Dragon's Dogma, Dark Arisen.
Oh yeah, I mean, it's on all platforms. That's the deluxe edition. Plus it's got the pawn system, which is just great. Yeah. You literally just like make a bodyguard of a different RPG character
that you can rent out to other players.
and you can rent bodyguards from other players and make them, and like if other players use your bodyguard gets stronger and comes back with more knowledge of the world. That's just so cool. And I would love to be on the game from Jump Street and like a sequel where they do that, because I love the pawn system.
Do you imagine it for a Dark Souls type game?
That would be fun. I really would enjoy that.
Instead of just having, you know, invaders coming into your system, you can have a bodyguard for that.
Yes, I would enjoy that very much.
Anyways, yeah, but in short, you know, the COVID-19 epidemic has had unexpected effects on video game community, and this is one of them. And you know, Capcom going cheap on netcoding is biting them in the ass right now, because you have to wonder what the company is thinking right now when their best players are complaining.
Yeah, like people will say all day that it can be unprofessional, but like, it's really frustrating when you lose to something besides the other player. It's really frustrating because, like,
especially if the other player is using what people would call a noob character.
Yeah, I agree with TJ, and I think it can be considered unprofessional for the game company not to have proper servers and, you know, internet connections for these players to play the game.
Well, it's not the servers, it's the netcode.
The netcode, then. To have it, you know, function for their players to be playing competitively, because why do this at all if you're not going to provide the best experience? I mean, they should take pride in their games, but, you know, it's...
They take pride in the money.
Yeah. they don't care. It's like, no, they bought it. We don't have to go that much effort. If they bought it, then who cares? That's what they do. It just sucks.
Then you have people who make the you have people whose artworks and Skullgirls and mm-hmm. you know, all these people actually care about what their game looks like and plays.
Yep.
So.
Yeah. Well, I mean, eventually it's not just Capcom either. It's a lot of different fighting games out there right now. Like, there's a reason why the four fighting games that are in EVO Online are in EVO Online. It's because they're the literally four fighting games that don't have trash netcode right now. And I'm talking about, like, Street Fighter has trash netcode. Tekken 7 has questionable netcode. Smash Bros. Ultimate has non-existent netcode. like, And Smash Bros. Is confounding because Splatoon 2 is sitting right there. Mario Kart 8 is sitting right there. And there is not a single issue with online play in either of those games. It's ridiculous.
The four games that are going to be done are Mortal Kombat 11, Killer Instinct, Them's Fightin' Herds, and Skullgirls.
All games with good netcode that are pretty reliable. Yep. And online play.
That have seemingly zero latency online play.
Unfortunately, like Arc System Works games, like I love BB Tag and Guilty Gear, but they have delay netcode, and that's just not very good. But who knows? Like they're talking about, like, thankfully Guilty Gear is going to be getting rollback netcode in the next game, so everybody's hope is ready to see how that goes, because Guilty Gear is a great game with great and beautiful animation. It should have rollback netcode, so it can be perfect.
And I'm not too sad about it, because here's the thing. Them's Fightin' Herds and Skullgirls deserve the stage.
Yeah, they do. They made good games, and they made them without giant multi-million-dollar publishers behind them. Mm-hmm. So that's something and they built an audience without multi-million-dollar publishers behind them. So, like, that's impressive. That's cool. Yeah. It's Evo is going to have two indie games in its main lineup, and that's dope.
Yeah. Hopefully, main six will be able to speak to Cartoon Network and Lauren Faust. And Lauren Faust has actually wanted to help them make characters for Them's Fightin' Herds, actually. But you know, it'd be nice if the intellectual Hasbro would say, sure, why not? I guess they just don't want their ponies to be fighting like that. I don't know, but Lauren Faust thought it was okay, so hey Hasbro. Fighting is magic come.
Yeah, absolutely.
Grows the product. And by the way, it was published by Humble Bundle, but of course it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's going to be fun to watch how these games turn out. Like, I haven't played even a little bit of Fightin' Herds, but I have watched other people, like, build combos in that game. And it is, like, the most – I wouldn't expect a game that was built around My Little Ponies to be so technically driven. But, man, that game has some depth to it.
Are you saying there's a My Little Pony fighting game?
That's Them's Fightin' Herds.
That's what we're talking about.
Oh, wow. I didn't know.
It is literally done in a style that is completely like a close enough without being sued for copyright infringement to My Little Pony.
Because I was going to say, My Little Pony, I thought it was supposed to be a friendship game, not a beat 'em up game.
Fighting is, here's the thing. You can fight and still be friends.
Yeah, sure.
If you say so, Jonah.
They're not killing each other. They're just fighting. They're sparring.
Yeah. Yeah.
Although it's hard for me to figure out how Fluttershy would fight. Although maybe she'll does her counterpart just summon animals to fight for her?
I don't know.
I mean, she does get mad. She does have the stare. So.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Hasbro, just do it. And you know how much money you could make from DLC? I mean, pretty sure people would want to play as Cheese Sandwich or as, oh god, I forgot his name. Applejack's big brother, Big Ed? No.
I know the name of this.
He only says, yup. Nope.
Rayburn. I'm mad that I know that.
It's fine.
Red Delicious. Big Red. I think his name is Big Red. Or something like that. Damn it, I'm going to have to look this up now, because it's getting me...
Isn't it Big Macintosh or something
Big
like
Mac.
That?
Big Mac. Yeah, Big Macintosh. Big Mac, yeah.
All right.
Oh, he's Red, that's why I thought Big Red. But yeah.
The Macintosh Apple.
Yep. Anyways, but yeah, it would be endless, you know? And you could just tell, you know, it would be sort of like the... oh boy, what is it called again? Like the paintball version of a shooter with fighters. Just, you know, they don't have to. They don't have to get hurt. They can just be fighting and get knocked out. That's all. Anyways, look for our show notes at GamingPodcast.net, along with industry news and our gaming history articles. If you have feedback, leave us comments at our blog at GamingPodcast.net. Also, hit us up at Facebook.com/GamingPodcast. Subscribe to us on iTunes and leave some iTunes comments. You can find me on Twitter at Jonah Falcon.
You can find me at Giant Chugs.
You can find me at Alpha Shark.
And you used to be able to see me Mixer.com/Jonah_Falcon, but that's not going to be happening anymore, so after a month from now, so it'll just have to be Twitch or whatever. We'll see. There wasn't much news today, but we got a lot of good stuff out. Hopefully next week. You know, we didn't even discuss the IGN game rollout. I guess we could do it next week.
Sure.
Anyways, we will see you next week.
Happy gaming, everyone.
Have fun. Be cool. Play games, y'all.